Welcome to episode 147 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week we read Young Avengers Sidekicks by Alan Heinberg. And now, the show begins.
Welcome to a time-traveling episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hello.
And Jen.
Hi.
Hi. And this week, we're starting off our Marvel Youngins arc. We're going to start off by reading Young Avengers Sidekicks that collects Young Avengers 1-6 by Alan Heinberg. And I didn't know... I went into this kind of knowing some of the characters through HeroClix, but other than that, I didn't really know anybody. And I didn't know the context at all for the story, like how they how the actual vendors have been disbanded and all this, that, and the other thing. So I was a little bit out of place for this, but I feel like I was able to pick up enough.
Yeah, I don't think that the, because this is pre-Civil War, but post Avengers Disassembled, and I don't think for this story alone, I don't think you really need to have read the other stuff. I think they cover it well enough in the story here.
Yeah. Avengers are not in commission. Is that the phrase? Sure. Basically.
Right. And they say it's because of Scarlet Witch, and then you see that the Vision's destroyed, and all the things that are pertinent to the story that we're reading are covered.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And what I really liked as filled in backstory is I've been reading Marvel for a couple of years, and I never knew the reason, in continuity anyway, why Marvel didn't have sidekicks. You know? Because DC, everybody seems to have a sidekick. You know, there's Aquaman, Aqualad, Superman, Superboy, Super this, Batman, Robin, like all those kinds of things, you know? And so it's a very stark difference between the two. And I always knew the out-of-continuity reason. I always knew that Stan Lee personally hated sidekicks, and he thought that it was a stupid idea. He was like, if I am a 30-year-old crime-fighting superhero playboy billionaire, why do I want to take a 13-year-old boy out with me to go crime-fighting? Like, he's like, it's the stupidest thing. If I wanted a sidekick, I would pick another grown-ass man who is totally capable of handling himself, in which case it's not a sidekick, it's a team-up. Like, just have heroes being heroes and kind of doing their job, and the idea of a sidekick just seemed ridiculous. The same kind of, I think, reasoning that they use real cities in Marvel versus DC's fake cities. Just the added bit of realism. I think he believed that having sidekicks in stories brought you out of the realism, because no 40-year-old man wants to hang out with a 13-year-old boy. But it was really cool to see the Captain America explanation, how everybody wanted to be a sidekick, and then nobody wanted to be a sidekick.
Yeah, and it's understandable, because, like, that is the myth. It's a really fun, cool thing, and then someone gets dead, and it's suddenly not fun or cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, even in DC, sidekicks get killed, but people still are like, I'm gonna take that dead guy's place. That seems like a good idea. I mean, yeah. Batman's the poster boy for sidekicks and dead sidekicks.
Yeah, you'd think if Batman came up to you and was like, hey, you wanna be the next Robin? You'd be like, hell no.
Yeah, I would not want to. I would be like Flash's sidekick. That'd be way better. Or just being Jimmy Olsen is better.
Probably, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. He doesn't have to fight anybody.
Yeah.
He just has adventures.
And no matter what, never ever become a Teen Titan. Just do not do it. They get slaughtered en masse.
And don't become a Legionnaire. It's Legion of Superheroes Legionnaire, because you're going to get canceled.
Yes. After about 4 issues. So it was really neat then to see this take on young heroes. Because Marvel, I think, doesn't have a lot of young teams, right? I know there's younger and older X-Men.
Yeah, I think X-Men's probably the best example in Marvel of teens fighting.
Yeah, because I can't think of any, but other than what we just read, which I didn't know existed before we decided to do this, I don't know of any like young teams, not even necessarily teen, but like the starter leagues of heroes.
I mean, so there's the Runaways, but they're not really they weren't out to be superheroes, you know?
Yeah, they kind of stumbled into it.
They're kids with powers who were trying to, at first, stop their parents from doing evil stuff, and then trying to survive. There's, what are those guys called? The New Warriors, but they're not really...
They're more like punks.
Yeah, they're... Being young is not a... It's not really a prominent feature of the team. They're more like modern heroes.
Yeah.
Nowadays, since, Runaways and Young Avengers have come out, teen heroes are more prominent. During Civil War, there was the Avengers Initiative, where they trained young heroes, or they trained younger heroes to be superheroes that worked for the government. Mm-hmm. You know, they were all on Tony Stark's side. Then there was, out of that, later they did Avengers Academy, which was exactly what it sounds like. It was teen heroes who were being trained by Henry Pym and Tigra and some other people. And yeah, I know, great role models.
No, I just like how, of course, they can't be trained by Iron Man and Captain America because those fools are busy. So you send in the people who aren't busy, Hank Pym and Tigra.
And now they have, whatchamacallit, Avengers Arena, which is basically Battle Royale, the comic.
Really?
I read the first two issues and then I was like, I don't really care about this. The premise of Avengers Arena is that Arcade, you know the villain Arcade?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He captures a bunch of teen heroes, puts them on an island in which they have to Hunger Games themselves.
I was really hoping it was a new Avengers recruitment technique, throw five of them in a ring together and the winner gets to join the team.
Yeah, I don't think that's really how the Avengers would do that, Andy.
Probably not. That would make for an interesting story.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually true, because if you think about it, for a while, the only real teen, prominent teens in Marvel that I could think of are maybe, Bucky, who didn't do so well, and then, Kitty Pryde, who everyone loves, but grew up eventually, and Jubilee.
Oh, Jubilee.
And Rogue, too, I guess.
Jubilee can never grow up now.
Well, the thing about the X-Men mutant examples is they were on a team where they were mentored by older, more experienced heroes also.
And they were at school. It was superhero school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was set up that way from the start. That's true. So what did you guys think of the setup for this comic? Thinking back on it, that scene with J. Jonah Jameson was it was just there to set up the premise of this story and call them the Young Avengers. Do we call them the Young Avengers? I just called them that. Why not? What did you guys think of that kind of that setup for this team, for something that never existed before in Marvel?
I think it's kind of cool. I think the way it was introduced with the newspaper, with Jonah's meeting with what's her name?
Fucking Jessica Jones.
Jessica Jones and the other lady that I forgot her name already.
Cat Farrell or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Farrell Cat.
I thought that was a cool way to introduce it. I don't really have more to say. I just thought it was a neat way to go about it.
Yeah. I just thought it was. I wanted to bring it up because I think this comic in the beginning is kind of supported by its cameos a little bit with J. Jonah Jameson. All right. Landing you somewhere familiar. Here's Jessica Jones. She's considered C-lister maybe, but she's recognizable in a lot of different things.
I mean, right here, she was a major character because this was around the time after Alias.
Mm-hmm.
And, she was part of the Avengers because she was, with Luke Cage. No. She was with Luke Cage.
Oh, yeah.
She was never... I don't think there was ever actually a comic where she was Jewel. I think that was something that came up from... came up out of Alias.
Really?
Huh.
That's interesting.
I'm not 100% sure. Listeners, you can correct me if you want. You know how to contact us. There was a few years ago after the Dark Reign arc in Marvel, there was a couple issues where she put on the Jewel costume and fought along with the Luke Cage's team. I think they were the New Avengers. That was the title she was in, and that's it as far as I can remember.
Because I just when I was reading the first like couple pages, I was like, oh, sick, J. Jonah Jameson. Oh, it's freaking Jessica Jones. Like, I was able to get excited about this because I recognize these people. Because I think if you just dive straight into the team of new kids, they are a little annoying to start with.
They're not as bad as they could have been. I honestly expected to really dislike this comic on the basis of I don't like kids in comics. Mm. And they actually seemed a lot more reasonable and level-headed than... Or not even, like, reasonable, but less pun-filled. They didn't make as many terrible puns as a lot of younger teams do.
Yeah, not just puns. It seems to me like whenever we read a comic with teenagers in it, or at least most of the time that you read a comic book with teenagers in it, the prevailing sense is that it's some old person trying really, really hard to sound young and hip. And in this, I don't get that vibe at all. Not even a shred, which is really nice.
Yeah, it was surprisingly not very corny, which I appreciated that a lot, and it actually made me like this a lot more.
Like, I really appreciated that each of the characters had their own little thing, right? Like, I think Billy, Wiccan / Asgardian, I don't know what name we want to call him by. I'll call him Wiccan because that's what I know him from Heroclix. I like that he has the teenager's flaw of lack of confidence. He's not sure in what he wants to do, you know? That he has that flaw, but he doesn't have to have the equally annoying flaws as well. He's just a kid who hasn't found his sense of self, and that's why he's trying to imitate so hard Thor, because that gives him a sense of purpose. And I like that that grows naturally into his friendship with Teddy, who's basically doing the same thing, imitating Hulkling, but he's doing it because he wants to fit in, not because of lack of confidence. I like that they have typical teenager flaws, lack of confidence, wanting to fit in, those kinds of things, but they aren't so annoying that you normally find in teenage comics.
Yeah, it's not melodrama so yes. That you can see, like, this is a problem that a teenager has and all teenagers have this problem. It's more like they're actual people. And I feel like the writing here is more akin to what we saw in Runaways than it is to something like Teen Titans.
Mm-hmm. So what did you guys think of some of the other characters on this team, too? What did you guys think of Cassie, per se, stature?
I really don't like her power, and there's no good reason for that. It just strikes me as, I mean, I can also see, like, why it's extremely useful and how it makes sense considering who her dad is, even though it sounds like maybe she's a mutant or mutated herself by dicking around with Pym particles when she was a kid.
No, she has the same powers as her dad, who just is exposed to Pym particles a lot, and then they can... she's not mutated or anything.
Well, she says, like, that she tried using Pym particles and, like, snuck them off, and it never did anything, and then out of nowhere she gets, like, upset and then grows. So it seemed a little like they were leaving it purposefully where they could give you a different explanation if they wanted to.
See, my thoughts when that came up was it was kind of a subtle way, but not so subtle way, of saying that it never manifested because she hadn't started puberty, per se. Because I think they also say in this comic that she's 13 or that she'll be 13 in like a month or something like that. I think she's definitely the youngest person on the team.
She'll be 15, but she is really 15. Young. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe not then. I don't know. I don't know why I would wait until 15 then. But anyway, that was kind of the sense I got, is that she had dicked around with her father's technology and it had become part of her biology, so that's why she doesn't need his equipment to change size, which is kind of neat. Because I always thought it was weird when a person's, like, abilities are tied into their equipment, because it's like, oh, all I have to do is break the equipment.
Yeah. It just, even though she can do it on her own, it being able to shrink or grow big, albeit useful, it feels lame to me. I don't know if anyone else, like, listening has that same vibe about it, but I'm just kind of like, couldn't you have a cooler power?
Well, they're supposed to mirror the original Avengers team,
right? Yeah.
So that's why. That's the editorial reason why.
Yeah, right? And I mean, I never cared about Ant-Man, so. I mean, that's the problem.
I think size-changing powers can be really, really cool if used correctly, but I think we just haven't gotten a chance to see her learn how to do it. And she, unlike the rest of these guys on the team, she doesn't really have a role model for how to use it cool-like. I mean, I think Wiccan can look up to Doctor Strange and Thor. Hulkling has all kinds of people he can look up to with stretchiness and shape-changing and hulking out and all that kind of stuff. But Cassie, I mean, he's dead.
Yeah. You know what it is? It's not inherently badass. You have to, like, make it work to be right. A badass. Whereas if you're mega rich, that's inherently badass because that's like being Batman. You can have whatever you want. If you are a magic user, that's inherently badass. If you can fly, that's pretty badass. If you can punch someone to death, that's badass. So, I mean, all of those things kind of, I think, make size changing pale in comparison just as like an aesthetic of coolness. Because you got to use it well to be cool.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because like when if you read the Atom, like Ray Palmer? I don't think he's badass because the most innovative thing he uses his power to do is to go down to the size of an electron and then fly through go through the telephone wire, like on an electron. Like that's kind of a different way of thinking about it, but that's really the coolest thing you can do, you know? And like he'll go in and like stomp on people's brains and stuff. But like Ryan Choi makes it badass because he figures out that you can change your mass independent of your size and that your size changing, and like he uses it to become a better fighter. Like, oh, it's really easy to start a jump kick when I'm light, and then when I'm midair get really fucking heavy and just beat the crap out of them because I'm already flying, motion stays in motion, all that kind of cool stuff. And then likewise, Atom Smasher, a JSA hero. I mean, being big isn't that great, but if you call yourself Atom Smasher, that kind of helps.
Yes.
As opposed to stature.
Yeah. I think it's good so that you can expose people to, like, new vocabulary, I guess. But stature is not a name that strikes fear into the heart of villains.
Yeah. The only thing I'll say about our character, I was really caught off guard when she displayed that she had feelings for Young Kang.
Yeah, that was abrupt.
It seemed like it came out of left field.
At least with Kate Bishop and Eli, you kind of saw it develop through the rivalry.
Yeah.
And then, like, even later we find out, way late, that Teddy and Billy are actually an item. Mm-hmm. But these guys, it was kind of like, it was even more sudden than what we saw in, like, Teen Titans with Beast Boy and Terra.
Yeah.
And in that one, it made sense because Terra was infiltrating them and she had to kind of make those moves in order to gain people's trust. But it didn't seem genuine here, or like it ought to have been genuine.
Yeah. So let's talk about that rolls naturally into Young Kang then. What did you guys think of little boy Kang?
He's a good dude. Like, I think I like the situation that he was put in because he, either way, is going to hurt a lot of people. And yeah. Right now it seems like there's nothing he can do. And that's a lot on the head of someone so young, and he deals with it pretty well.
Yeah. I like that it made me, when I was reading it, it reminded me a little bit of some of the Greek tragedies that we read back in school, in that there's no, both answers are right and both answers are wrong. If he isn't Kang and he stays Iron Lad, then he saves countless people on other worlds, and Kang the Conqueror never exists, right? But if he doesn't go back and he doesn't become Kang the Conqueror, then Earth is pretty fucked. And the Avengers die, and these people that he's hung out with die. It's like, damned if you do, damned if you don't. And both ways are right. You have a right to become a good dude if you want to be. You know, and you have a right to want to save all these lives, but you can't choose both. I like that they make him choose, and because I was almost expecting some time travel thing to come up and say, poof, you get both. But no, I like that they made him go that way.
Yeah, and it feels like we're going to see him kind of have a power of heart moment later, but I don't necessarily know if that's going to play out as a very trite occurrence. I don't know if he's going to come back and they'll be like, remember who you really are and that you loved us. And he'll be like, yes, it's true, I have heart, and then be good again, you know? Because that is a really annoying trope, and it's not really... it's not something I'm going to want to see.
He does come back, but not like that. Don't worry.
Okay.
That's much more interesting than that.
Yeah, that has to be further down the line, right? Because if Kang comes back like that, and not having completely forgotten everything, then Kang won't come back as evil as he has to be to make the Avengers prepare for him and form together and then save the world from him. Like, this is the thing that gets me with time travel, okay? Like, he has to be bad. Like, they drop that thing in there, but it can't be just, oh, I guess I am good Kang now. Right? Because then he would have to be older, because all of the other evil Kang things would have to happen before that happens. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Because this time travel stuff, like, I always feel like I have a handle on it, but it sort of gives me a little bit of a headache.
Yeah, I think part of it is it's not necessary. Some of it's, like, fine. Sometimes it's not well done in that they use it as, like, a convenient way to get rid of plot holes. And then it gets really confusing because you're like, why did this just happen this way? And time travel is a thing in comics where you either really need to avoid any explanation whatsoever and just rely on the reader not being incredulous, which is a very dangerous route to take because most people are like, that wouldn't work. Or you have to really keep strong inner continuity with yourself.
Yeah. It's that inner continuity that I think is the most important. Because the thing that, aside from trying to figure out how time travel plots weave together, the thing that bugs me the most about time travel is that you read the story knowing that in the end, it's probably not going to matter. You know? And I think my favorite example of that is Star Trek Voyager, the Year of Hell episodes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, those are such good episodes. And it would be so interesting to see that crew try to pull together after that brutal year. Right? It would be intense to watch that and rewarding to see it play out. But instead, at the very end, nope, time travel, everything back to normal. Everybody on their merry way. And it's like, it sort of provides you that what if kind of thing. But then if that what if is really good, as a reader, I feel robbed when it goes away. So like Kang, young Kang stabbing old Kang, I know it's not going to matter. Or will it matter? I don't know. It's hard to say.
I hope it matters.
You have to continue reading.
But it's like things like that make me be like, okay, he stabs him, but it's not going to matter because time travel.
Yeah, I feel like you bring up a good point in that it's used to play with character development, but then you can just erase it if you're bad. And it's like, no, you need to just stick with your writing and go with it and have confidence in yourself as a writer to bring it all together, because if you write genuinely like that, you're going to produce good work. You can't go half-assed, and that's what time travel is usually used for.
Well, I think the problem comes up more, not in the what if for character development, but that you do things to the world to make your characters react to them, and you want to keep the characters the same, but you can't leave the world the way that it is. And I think this comic's a good example of that, is
mm-hmm.
I like I like seeing how these characters react to this situation. I find it really, really interesting. Like, it's an intense situation for really young people. And how they respond to it's going to be really interesting. But you can't leave the world with, like, burning towers in the middle of New York City. You obviously can't do that in the Marvel Universe. So it's like, at a certain point, it has to not matter. But I guess you kind of get through that problem by making they all remembered what happened in the loophole.
That was actually a frustrating point, because I feel like we should have looked at it and, you know, they maybe don't remember all of it, or they could have done something kind of like emotionally meaningful with that later, but it felt like a very easy way for the writer, for Heinberg, to go ahead and say, like, I want characters to know this thing, so they know it, and then they're like, I don't know how that happened, and they kind of break the fourth wall on that one, like, and say, how do we still remember? It's not breaking the fourth wall, it's, there's another term for that. Shining lantern? Thing that someone will know what I mean out there.
I think that's DC. The Shining Lantern one.
That was bad.
I couldn't help.
But there is a term for when you point out the inconsistency in your own writing and make it into a little, like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge for the reader. And that's what they did here. And I don't know. It just felt cheap.
Yeah. But I think on the other side of it, I really want to give this writing props for dropping the reveal that Iron Lad is young Kang in, like, issue... Was it the end of issue one?
First. Yes, that was so nice. I thought we'd have, like... When that happened, I was like, wow, normally they would have dragged that out for 6 issues, and then this arc would have ended with, and he was actually Kang! And this was so nice in that it just moved things along. Things happened here.
Yeah. Because I think most comics, what they would do is, like, drop, like, a little hint in, like, the last 2 or 3 pages of each episode in the first trade, and then, like, the last page of the first trade would be, like, his Iron Lad armor changing to look like Kang armor. And then you'd be like, oh, no, and then have to buy the second trade. But it was so refreshing to be like, this team is built on a deception and a lie. And you might want to call it a necessary deception and a lie, but it's built on a deception. And we're just going to put that right out there. And by the way, this kid is Kang, and he's not fucking telling anybody. And it's Kang. That's basically like the Teen Titans having, I don't know, little Dark Side. Holy fuck, right?
Yeah.
It's really cool.
I definitely appreciate that the first people he told to were Captain America and Iron Man. He was just, like, on a mission, and he's like, I'm going to talk to people who know what to do.
I think at that point you have to, because the first thing you see them do is make a complete fucking mess of a rescue in the church.
Yeah.
Although, I'm glad that that happened, because that put Kate Bishop in the Marvel Universe, and she was great in Hawkeye, and it was good to see that that's not just Matt Fraction, that she was always kind of awesome.
She was... It took me a while to actually pinpoint who she was, even though they were, like, calling her Hawk Girl for a little bit.
Yeah.
Or, like, Lady Hawkeye.
Hawkingbird, yeah, because she was wearing Mockingbird's mask.
But,
go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, once I realized where I had seen her, I was like, oh, she was always awesome. I love that.
I like that when they break into the mansion's, like, armory, she doesn't pick one weapon. She just says, I grabbed everything I could handle.
Well, which she's makes trying sense. To cover all her bases. She doesn't have doesn't have any powers.
That's what I was thinking. You're like, you don't have powers? Fucking, I don't know. Maybe you're going to need a bow and arrow. Maybe you're going to need a sword. Maybe you're going to need throwing stars. Who the fuck knows? Grab them all. Grab everything you can carry. Don't worry about it weighing you down. You might need it.
She is the Batman of Marvel. Because, I mean, he has the same thing. He has, like, all these gadgets and gizmos because he's ultra prepared. And she's used to, like, having lots of stuff, and now she gets cool stuff like swords, and it works out.
But that scene is also where they start the Patriot Kate Bishop little rivalry that I think turns into a romance. I don't know.
Looks like it.
Yeah,
it
looks
like it. Looks like it will.
Later. Yeah. I'm okay with that. I feel like it came about naturally.
But it's one of those ones where it like never really. I mean, it's kind of is there, but then it's kind of it's more like a weird, awkward teen tension thing than a real like boyfriend girlfriend relationship.
Is it? It's like Twilight Blue Balls kind of stuff.
No, not like that. It's like. No, they're not like weird around each other. They're always like cool, but I don't know. It's hard to describe.
Okay, I just might keep reading and find out. You know, I really didn't expect to like Patriot. Like, after reading the first issue, I was like, this kid is a fucking douchebag with an anger problem. What the fuck?
if you read the next trade, little spoiler here, it makes a lot of sense why he acts the way he does.
Well, even, like, once he explained who he is, it makes sense. Because he kind of, I mean, what was the guy's name? Isaiah...
Bradley.
Isaiah Bradley, the first Captain America, the black Captain America. Like, I knew he existed, but if I were his grandson, I would be really pissed that Steve Rogers is going around getting all this attention when your grandfather was an experiment for this country that led to Steve Rogers. And it's like, he's not getting any respect. Like, my grandfather is getting no respect for what he should. You know, and so then I like that anger channels Eli into picking up that mantle. That was awesome. I really like that about him.
I'm telling you, you should read the next trade.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say.
Although it is really hard to keep calling him Patriot in my head, because after he got the shield, I just kept thinking Blacked in America.
He never goes by that.
Damn it. Damn it. Although that shield is way cooler than Cap's. I know, like, the round shield's iconic, but that, like, crest-looking one with the three tips is so much cooler. Deep insight right there. Deep.
Seriously, dude. Read the next trade.
Okay. So what about, what did you guys think of Teddy Hulkling?
He's cool. Yeah, I like that he was, like, calm and collected for all of it. I'm kind of tired of Hulk figures. Like, She-Hulk is cool when she's being a lawyer, but I don't really like this whole raging green monster.
No, that's thing. The part I like the best.
I've never been a Hulk fan. It seems not that interesting to me, but here it's like, I really appreciate that he was clever enough to say, well, I can make myself look like the Hulk, and I need to make up some sort of tie to the Avengers, so I'm gonna do it this way. And that it actually works, because he can shapeshift into, like, a muscular person. 'Cause, I don't know, you look at other shapeshifters, and they tend to do, like, the Beast Boy thing, where they switch around a whole lot, and you see them... you know, trying to outsmart or outmaneuver opponents. But here it's just like, I'm going to punch people because I can shapeshift into someone much bigger.
I can shapeshift into the fucking Hulk. So wait, he's a Skrull, right?
Yeah.
Skrull Kree.
He's a Skrull Kree hybrid.
Skrull Kree. Is that revealed in this comic?
No,
we just spoiled it.
Spoiler.
Whatever, I just... people.
I could spoil it even harder than that. Because he's actually Captain Marvel, the original Captain Marvel's son. Oh, with a Skrull princess.
Oh, he's royalty, I see.
Yep.
I got it from when he did, how was it? He stretched around somebody to, like, push somebody away or punch somebody.
There's a part when they're fighting Kang in the, like, the destroyed future where he stretches out really long. Like, makes his arm really long, I think.
Yeah, I don't know, but somehow when I saw that panel, I'm like, oh, fuck, he's a Skrull. And the art was able to give me that cue a little bit.
And what's cool about this comic, right, is you kind of get a little bit with Billy, where Patriot's like, use more of your powers, dude. Don't just use lightning, you know? This really just scratches the surface with a lot of these guys. Like, we're just really... it's 6 issues, right? But we really... Like, you're just really only introduced to these characters. There's a lot... There's a lot more to all of them.
Yeah, I really want to know how Billy's powers work. Because I think, like... I think he's doing it right, but in the wrong way, if that makes any kind of sense. Or doing it wrong in the right way. Like, because he taught himself how to do it, right? And he taught himself how to do it better by reading one of his mom's self-help books. Which is hilarious and awesome. But it's like, what could you be if you actually knew how your powers worked?
Like, scary.
Yeah. If you had better control over them and didn't have to say out loud what you were doing. Like, if you could just make it happen. I mean, I'm interested in knowing, like, the limits of his abilities, too, but it's also, like, he seems to have some of the highest potential of the people on the team.
Well, I think it's also balance. Because, you know, like, you play a video game, and if a character has some really strong potential powers, you can't just let that be it. You have to handicap them in some way. Otherwise, it takes all the fun out of it. And here, he's handicapped because he doesn't know how to use his powers. And that's a good thing because, first off, it lets us see him develop. And then it lets the other team members actually get something done. Whereas I kind of feel like, you know, if he was really competent with his magic, he'd be like, I'll handle this, and I'll handle this, and that. And it wouldn't be a team effort. It would be the Superman problem all over again, where you can, like, I think fairly easily argue, why does Superman need the Justice League? Because he's really strong and doesn't, like, very few things pose an actual threat to him.
Yeah.
So it's good to see someone who's a little incompetent when they have powers that could be that big.
And you know what? That reminds me. I really want us to read Green Lantern when Kyle Rayner becomes Ion, because he gets to a point where he realizes that the entire power of what used to be all of the Green Lanterns in the Green Lantern Corps is concentrated in just him. And he reaches this almost godlike state where he's more powerful than the Spectre. And there's this scene where some armada is getting close to Earth and might be invading it. And he's just sitting at a chair at the table. And they're all, like, starting to get alarmed. He's like, don't worry, I took care of it. Like, I froze time, flew over there, destroyed them all in a second, and came back. It's cool, don't worry, I took care of it. And Superman basically takes him aside and more or less says, bro, you got to calm down. Sometimes you have to give them things to do.
Wow.
That's messed up.
Right?
Really messed up.
But I feel like Superman would do that. He just wouldn't tell anyone. He would just be, like, the good guy.
Yeah.
To make everybody feel welcome.
But he's like secretly keeping them as his pets, basically.
Not like pets, just like they are useful. But it's like Superman probably could go and take care of all of that all by himself. I don't know. It's slightly demeaning, but it's done in a Superman-y kind of way. That's really, really interesting. Anyway, we'll read that later. But about this comic, there's one thing I really want to bring up, and I think it's the sort of philosophical dilemma that gets brought up, and I want to explore that a bit more between whether or not Kang should go back. Where do you guys fall on that?
I fall under the Vulcan proverb of the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, Kang says to Iron Lad that, you know, yes, the Avengers kick his ass every time, but if he can control time, it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
But the Avengers always kick his ass. So it's like, is it really that bad if Kang is doing his bad guy stuff if he always gets beat? Probably not that big of a deal. It's either, yeah, maybe Kang will succeed, but probably the Avengers will destroy him, or Iron Lad stays and New York is a fiery hellhole.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I agree with Iron Lad's decision to go back.
Okay. What about you, Jen?
Yeah, based on the information that we currently have, I have to agree with David. I mean, they could do some reveal with, like, oh, you know, the Avengers actually, because of who they are, caused more lives to be saved than the billions Kang kills. But it seems so unlikely that that would happen, and it's a common plot thing where people say, like, oh, the characters that you care about and the people on Earth are worth more than this abstract number of people out there that we never see. Because we're supposed to be like, oh, it's terrible if Captain America dies, and I can't stand that thought, but and not care so much when we see Kang kill a billion people because they're not Captain America. But it's still a billion people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can't say, like, one person is worth more than the other. That's a hard ethical argument. So, yeah, I think that he should go back and... I don't think he should go back if it's going to mean saving billions of lives.
See, that's where I am. Because I'm with David on the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, John Cerulean, utilitarianism, all that kind of stuff, Jeremy Bentham, great. But, like, at the same time, it's really ambiguous just what impact Kang has, right? So, okay, Kang never becomes Kang the Conqueror, and therefore the Avengers never form to beat him and become stronger and then better defend the Earth against the threats that apparently eventually come and destroy it, right? So Earth will fall, but at the same time, all of the other planets that Kang gets the title Kang the Conqueror for, they'll be fine. All those people will be brought back to life. But then you have to balance those against the impact of the Avengers off the planet Earth, right? Like, what about all the times that the Avengers have been involved with, like, Galactus or Thanos or any of the other galactic stuff, right? Annihilus. All of those have to come into account, too, because what if such and such of the Avengers never beat Annihilus in this fight, you know? What if they never went and slowed down Galactus from this thingy-majigger? Like, without knowing just how heavy both of those scales are, it's hard to put that difference on it. And I think that's why we get the character interactions that we do. Like, the kids, they say, it's like it's interesting that all of the kids of the Young Avengers, they immediately say, no, young Kang, little Kang, you need to stay here. Like, don't go back. You don't have to become evil. You don't need to become evil. Stay here, stay here, stay here. But I think that's more selfish that they do it out of, more out of their id. Whereas both, or all three of Jessica Jones, Captain America, and Iron Man all immediately say, yeah, buddy, sorry, you got to go home. And I think they know, like, they can't think of how big those scales are because they're, like, that's, what is it? The problem with astrophysics is that you work in numbers that your mind can't possibly fathom. Like, you can't, don't even bother trying to think of how many lives are involved in this exchange. Just look at what's around you, and that you know you can weigh. Like, okay, New York City's in ruins, probably most of the planet Earth, and we know if we send you back, at least that comes back. If nothing else, that comes back. So I think just because of that, I need to decide to send him back too. But it does make me wonder. It makes me wonder. Should Iron Man be more selfless and say, no, Earth must die so that the galaxy can be saved? I don't know.
Yeah, I think, like, Captain America is probably qualified to make the decision, but, you know, he's probably going to try to do the best for everyone. I feel like having Iron Man as the other guy there is a little sketchy because even though Iron Man tries to do good on a very consistent basis, he, in the end, is kind of, like, really egotistical and selfish in some ways. So maybe he's not really qualified to think about that and, you know, make a statement on it.
Anyway, I don't know. I wanted to talk about that because I thought it was really interesting that came up in this comic. And by the resolution of the story, you kind of get the idea that you're supposed to agree that he needs to go back. But I think it's kind of hinted at in there a little bit, like, if Kang stays and stays Iron Lad, Kang the Conqueror never exists, and all those worlds don't have to go through that massacre. And I think it's really ballsy of a comic about teens to bring up that kind of interesting dilemma. So what do we think of the art?
I liked it.
Yeah, it's great.
I felt like they did facial expressions really well, and I enjoyed that I was able to distinguish among all of them, even when there was really little detail. Because mm-hmm. there were scenes when, you know, they're kind of really shadowed or smaller, and it was easy to tell who was who and who was speaking. Like, the fight scenes I enjoyed, like, I thought that the frames flowed pretty well, and it was easy to figure out exactly what was happening. The only thing is, we only get, like, one big two-page spread throughout this whole thing, and it, or, like, maybe two of them. And I would have liked more of those, just because they're dramatic and cool.
And this artist is good at drawing them, and good at doing the framing to build up to them. Right, like, you get that two-page spread of, send him back or I'll kill this baby. Right, and that one's kind of like, okay, but it's set well. The characters are on the page where they should be. It looks good. But, like, I think where it really pays off is, like, when the team is fighting Kang in the destroyed New York future. And it's kind of like, oh, this, now that. Oh, we got to do this, focus on that, focus on the other thing. Oh, fuck, sword through the heart. Like, yeah. The oh, fuck moment, like, is just boom. It's right there. And it's drawn really well. And it's like, damn. Like, the frames flow you right into that so well.
Yeah, my only complaint, like, just flipping through all the pages now, is that when Eli has his mask off, he doesn't look like a young Avenger. He looks like a 30-year-old Avenger.
He's very angry looking.
Yeah,
some
but...
Some of the pictures.
Some of it looks like just anger, but sometimes it looks like someone who just has gone through a lot. And maybe he's meant to look older than his age, and we're supposed to think, like, oh, he's wise, and that's why he's a leader. But he looks like an adult. He does not look like a teen.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't... I didn't pick up on that. So.
His brow is consistently furrowed. I think that's what it is. You know, he frowns, and then, like, you get the brow lines, and that's why... People always say, like, oh, don't frown. You're going to look like you're always frowning. But apparently he did not follow that advice.
Yeah. Older people are angrier.
True story, I guess.
I don't know. It's just that was my takeaway.
Actually, so who's your favorite, Andy?
Oh, man. It'd be so easy to say Kate Bishop, who just wants to grab all the weapons.
That's the cool thing to say. That's the trendy answer.
That's the trendy answer.
You could say Kate Bishop. It's okay. I won't hold it against you.
I know. I'm kind of interested a little bit in almost all of them, except for stature. So I kind of want to say Eli, because I really like his backstory. He's the only one that seems to have a really fleshed out one right now. And
oh, man. You gotta read the next one.
I am.
If you think his background's fleshed out, you gotta read the next one.
I'm interested. They go through this comic talking about how they don't want their parents to find out, and then they find freedom and fuck it, let's just tell them. And then what do the Avengers have to hang over our heads? Goddamn nothing. But I'm interested. He wears a full-on mask. Everybody else in this is, like, kinda covered, but he wears a full-on mask. So I'm interested in why. Is it because his parents are extra, or, like, he's extra afraid of his parents, or what he'll go through when they find out? I don't know, but I think
that. Read the next one.
I think it's interesting. So I think even though Kate Bishop's the trendy answer, I'm going to say Eli, Patriot, Blacked okay. in America.
Blacked in America. How about you, Jen? Who's your favorite?
Billy.
He's my favorite too.
Yeah, I really think he has cool powers, and I want to see him, like, figure out how to use them. So I think he has, like, great potential as a hero. And he just seems like a really kind of calm and caring person. Like, he cares about his teammates, and we see discussions where he worries about, you know, how the team's going to get on and, like, the practical thing to do. And it just, I like that personality. He's not angry. He wants to help people, and he's trying to figure out, like, the best way to do that.
Yeah. He's yours too, David?
Yeah, I like Billy a lot. He's but I'm kind of coming at this from somebody. So after I read this, I started getting the issues as this comic came out. And so it was originally just a 12-issue run plus an annual. It's not an annual. It's called Young Avengers Special. Mm-hmm. And then there was a Civil War 4-issue mini that was crossover with Runaways. And then there was one called Young Avengers Presents, which was like 6 issues. Then there was like Secret Invasion tie-in. Then there was a Dark Reign tie-in. They've only this 12-issue run that we're reading. Well, the 6 issues plus the next one is the only long one. But last year there was something called Avengers: The Children's Crusade, which was like 9 issues, and that's awesome. And like, knowing their whole story up till now, I think it's just Billy grows into such an awesome character that he's just really, really likable. And I like his relationship with Hulkling, because you kind of see that grow. You mentioned earlier, Jen, that it seemed kind of, it didn't seem very genuine because it seems like it came out of nowhere. Did you mention something like that
before? No, that was with Iron Lad and
Stature.
Okay.
No, I like this because Cassie made the one point about how the press would be making puns about Asgardian and Asgardian.
Yeah.
And then if you actually flip back, you can see, like, all these little things. Like, you know, when they're sitting on the park bench, one of them has his arm kind of around the other, but not quite. Like, it's not clear PDA, but it's a closeness. And then there's a lot of, like, hand on shoulder. And when one gets hurt, the other gets, like, really worried. So you realize it's a nice actual, like, bunch of hints at this relationship.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's great is as it grows, like, as they appear in comics, like, you see how much they genuinely, like, really care about each other. It's not like, you know how sometimes they have other relationships in comics where it's like the whole Superman Wonder Woman thing that came up recently in Justice League.
Yeah.
Like, you know how that was like a big news story, and then how Alan Scott is now gay too in the New 52, and like how these are like huge news items for some reason. Like, this is the Kate or the Hulkling and Wiccan relationship has been going on since like 2006 or something, whenever this came out, and it's like a genuine, they genuinely care about each other, and it's a great comic book relationship in general. Like, I just really like them as a pair.
You know what? Knowing that makes me want to read it even more, because I feel like those stories are really interesting because they're so rare, and because I think those kinds of things resonate with readers more than I think editors and authors think. Like, most adult people anyway, in their everyday lives, one of their driving goals in life is to make their significant other happy. Right. And so to see a caring, happy relationship in comics, like, that's why I get tied to Big Barda and Mr. Miracle. That's why I get tied to Animal Man. Animal Man's power set, whatever. His storyline where he meets Grant Morrison, that's kind of cool. But I like his relationship to his wife and his kids.
Yeah.
That's what ties me to him as a person, you know? And so, like, these characters and Wally West and his family, like, all the superhero stuff around them, great, but, like, he's just a dude who really cares about his wife and wants to be a good husband. Those are the things that tie me to him as a character, because I relate to those so much more than, like, Superman's burden of responsibility behind godhood and what the fuck. I can't relate to any of that shit. It's neat philosophically, but, like, It doesn't tie me to him as a man.
Yeah, it adds a human element, and that's what makes characters lovable. Like, I think we all remember, for instance, the relationship between Ralph and Sue Dibney.
Oh, yeah.
Like, anyone will shed a tear over that one. And there's that one scene where someone gives Ralph the advice to talk to her, even though she's gone. And you see him saying goodnight and talking about his day, and he reaches over to turn off his lamp. And it's, like, absolutely one of the sweetest, most touching panels in all of comics. And it's because it's so human. And it's nice to see a human relationship where people, you know, just care and try to be good people to each other. It's a lovely thing.
You know, whenever I hear the name Ralph Dibney, I don't think of any of the years and years of Justice League International I read, or any of the I can't believe it's not the Justice League stuff. What I think of one panel, and it's the panel where he has like the wicker body of her.
Oh, and from
in the rain,
oh, yeah.
And he just has his elongated arms wrapped around her like four or five times, and like, oh my god,
so sad.
That's what comes to my head. None of, I mean, we can talk about how destruction of comics through tragedy and sadness that's wanton, whatever. But like that destruction of their relationship strikes such an emotional chord because they were that couple. Ah. So yeah. I am interested in reading more for them, too.
yeah, good like, relationship, sir. So nice to have. Sorry.
I just want to say that this set of characters, this team, I'm really sad that they didn't have, that they don't have an ongoing comic, because I feel like there's so much there. Because, you know, they have all these miniseries. There's been like 6 miniseries featuring this team, and as you just see the team grow, it's not just like as a team, but the individuals are growing up and becoming not adults, but like figuring out their place in this world full of superheroes, right? And they stick together. It's such a genuine team. Like I can't. This is one of my favorite comics, I guess. I didn't really realize it until we read this again for the podcast, but. You know, I can look and I have like all the issues of them that have come out. Not this latest volume 2 one with Loki and those guys. But yeah, I'm very excited to read that one too.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those teams that like nobody is especially awesome or crazy cool, but they all kind of grow on you. You know?
The characters care about each other, and it makes me really care about them as a team. In a similar way that the Runaways was, or did, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just love this comic.
All right, then. Give me a rating. It's hard to do, like, just this trade when you've read all of it.
This trade, I think, I'm going to give this, I'll give it a 4. It's hard to give a comic a 5 because that's considered a perfect score. This isn't perfect, but I have trouble finding fault with it. I mean, I gave From Hell that a 5 last week, and this is not of the same caliber of you know, it's not the same caliber comic as From Hell, but it's really, really good. You know, the art's great. It's very dynamic, and it's fun to look at, and it's consistent, and the, like Jen said, the facial expressions are really good. The story is good, but I think the thing that drives this comic the most is the characters, and I just talked about it for like 5 minutes, but yeah, the characters are just so good, and the interaction between them is really interesting, and it just gets better. Listeners, go read the rest of this stuff. You will not be disappointed. I'm just going to leave it at that. So 4.
All right, Jen, how about you?
I'm going to give it a 3.5. I really enjoyed it. And I feel like it did a good job of avoiding some common pitfalls. Like, you know, when they revealed who Iron Lad was to Captain America, and Iron Man really early on. That was like, okay, they're moving the plot, and that was good. I feel like some of the time travel stuff got to be maybe like a little overwhelming to the plot itself, where it felt like it was getting hard to understand exactly what was going on, or, you know, it, some things were just explained away, like, why do they know what they know, even though it never happened? So some of that felt kind of, I won't say lazy, but, like, problematic writing. I really did like the art. I think that it just was a fun read, and I'm actually going to go through and read the rest of these issues. I'll definitely read the next trade and see where it goes from there. So, yeah, 3.5.
And I'm gonna go with David. I'm going to give it a 4. Because I really want to read the next couple issues. I really want to see what happens to Eli. I want to see what happens with Teddy and Billy. And I really want to see what happens with these characters. And I'm willing to take that jump because of what you say, Jen, how it's so amazing to see the big reveal happen in issue 1. And then rather than slowly peeling out the big reveal and then saving it for later, they put the big reveal up front and then they make these characters grapple with it for 5 issues. Like, the thing they're grappling with isn't, is it Kang? Is it not Kang? Is it Ireland? Who is he really? What is he doing? Who is this? That's not what they're grappling with. What they're grappling with is, oh, fuck, it's Kang. What the fuck do we do now? It's Kang. And that is a much bigger problem. And I want to give so much props to a writer that makes their characters go through that problem than go through the detective work of, who is this character? You know? It creates a much more complex set of circumstances for the characters to go through, and that's what's able to bring them together, flesh out their personality, and make them come together, and that makes them so much more interesting to read. So, hell yeah, a 4. And I have no problems with saying I'm going to read the next 6 of them, because I have Marvel Digital Comics Unlimited, and that shit is amazing. So I'm going to get to read all of these motherfucking Young Avengers for goddamn free. And I don't know why I just decided to start cussing a lot. I think you got to earn an explicit tag. But I really like that they have an Android app now, and I'm excited to own Marvel Digital Comics Unlimited. And I'm giving them a plug, even though we get sponsored by Diddly. Because I'm just going to read them all. And fuck it, why not, right?
Hey, it's just, you guys, we should, as comic book fans, we should need to support the comic book industry, right?
Yep.
And I'm going to rationalize this in my head by saying that whenever we review a trade paperback or a graphic novel and the format's really cool, we talk about quality of paper and stuff, like when we read like prestige format things for the show. So likewise, I'm going to plug this as a really, really good digital comics platform. I so wish Comixology would do this. I would pick Comixology like $20 a month to do this with their catalog. It would be awesome. So yeah, I guess plug, why not? Like David said earlier, next week we're going to read Young Avengers Style Over Substance, which is the newer Young Avengers from 2012. It's written by Kyron Gillen and it collects Young Avengers 1-5 and a thing from Marvel Now. I don't know. I tried to look up more about what Marvel Now was, how you could read that. It's in the trade paperback.
It's probably a... Marvel did like a point... Maybe I'm thinking of something else. They did like a...
The point one.
I think it's a point one issue, which is kind of like a standalone issue, but
okay.
I could be totally wrong.
I mean, if you buy the trade, it'll be in there. If you look it up on Marvel Digital Comics, it'll probably say something in there too. If you can't find it, I'm sure it's not going to matter too much. I don't know. We'll see next week when we read it. So that's next week. You can see what we have coming up after that, and then after that, and then after that, at www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. We've got all of our previous 146 episodes up on that bad boy. If you got a suggestion for what we can read coming up, if you have a request for us to discuss your favorite comic, let us know. Send us an email at
atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
And follow us on the social media, because we like to post cool fan art and all kinds of things that you might be finding interesting. You can do that at facebook.com/APSupercast, twitter.com/APSupercast, or Tumblr. No, APSupercast.tumblr.com. And the Tumblr, I think, is the key, because that's what we post on, and then everything else just kind of reposts that.
Yeah, Andy and I have been posting stuff on there, so check it out.
But if you don't have Tumblr and you only got Facebook, follow us there, and you'll see all the same posts. It's all good. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Woo! All right. Until next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye.